Blog Talk Radio. So is progressivism true? Is liberalism true? Or is it just a political theory? And if it's just a political theory, what kind of a theory is it? Because, you know, in all of these things that are going on in Washington right now, they act like it is off of Mount Sinai. And if you disagree with it, you need to be tortured until you admit that it's true. And, you know, I really don't get it. I think that life in the United States would be much better if the Democrats would back off of their need to make everybody agree with them, because it's obvious that a lot of people don't agree with them and are not going to, including the president. So, but now it's out there that they plan on filibustering Gorsuch. Now, if Gorsuch is not the finest person that I've seen interviewed for a position like a judgeship, then I don't know who else would be. I mean, he's clearly a good person. He's got a great record, and he brings to the court something that is very, very rare, which is this intellectual approach and a deep love of scholarship, and he's very thoughtful, and he seems like a guy who thinks on his own. Not going to let somebody else tell him what to do. And yet you've got him in a situation where he has to be defeated, or at least they have to fight against him because of what he represents. So that's where we're at in America. You could be the biggest scumbag in history, but as long as you're a liberal, you'll be supported by the Democratic Party, right? We have a couple of examples of that. If you're a conservative, you could have, cured cancer and the national debt in the same week, and they'd still want you to be deported or institutionalized. Now, there is a lot of fury going on in Washington right now over this claim by Devin Nunes, who's the head of this committee. And the fury is over that he leaked out that there had been potentially or probably or inevitably or in fact there had been wiretapping the term wiretapping doesn't really mean anything in this context anymore, because there's so many different ways to get information. But the president had been either purposefully or accidentally, I would say the evidence says purposefully, surveilled by the Obama administration. And now there is some call, even by liberals and Democrats on the fringes, that there could be an accounting. There would have to be a prosecution in this matter. So I've got a little clip for you here. It is really what they're calling a potential smoking gun, but I don't see, if you got Trump's information on purpose or accident, and then you spread it around and you took the block on the names away, you're just spreading people's personal information in an attempt to discredit them throughout the entire government, and then pretending that nobody's done anything. I think James Comey has to be removed, whatever it takes. The guy is just seeds chaos into different situations and acts like he's got more rectitude than anybody since Mother Teresa. But anyway, here we go. Here's a little bit of the report on the smoking gun from the spying, or whatever you want to call it, wiretapping, invasive maneuvers by the government to take down private information, listening in. Here we go. Here, this is from James Rosen.
It frustrates.
All right, so hold on. I got to shut down. Here we go. Got another. But anyway, hope you're well. It's the 24th of March, and this is a big story. So let me get you going here.
Nunes, he dropped the bombshell, and all the news that following the November election, that the Trump transition team and their communications were captured by intelligence community surveillance. After being briefed by Chairman Nunez, President Trump, well, he said he felt somewhat vindicated by this revelation. Check this out.
Do you feel vindicated by Chairman Nunez coming over here?
I somewhat do. I must tell you, I somewhat do. I very much appreciated the fact that they found what they found. I somewhat do.
And joining us now, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunez, a congressman from California. Congressman, thank you for being with us. Let's go over what it is that you said the other day, which has now gotten a lot of play, and that is, in fact, surveillance took place in November, December, and January of the president-elect, his transition team. What else do you know?
Well, what bothers me is what I was able to review. Looks like it was in November, December, and January. Those reports are concerning to me, and I briefed the speaker, and then I spoke to the news media publicly, and then went to brief the president on what I saw because I think it's important that he sees it.
The president then said,
"Let me see what's happened here, but." Just what happens on these computers.
Claims that he felt he was, well, he said wiretapping, but surveillance wiretapping, in my view, would just really parsing words. But
let's take a little break here and let me get this thing going because I think it's an important report. 613, Kelly O'Connell, we'll be right back.
He was picked up, at least in an incident.
Good morning, Kelly.
What's up, man?
Well, I want to announce my candidacy for mayor of Las Cruces against Craig Smith.
All right. I'm going to put you on hold. We'll be back. All right?
Your Honor.
We've got a call at 616. It's Bob, and Bob has an announcement to make.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Kelly. Before I finish, I'd like to ask you a question. Have you attended the Financial Peace University class with Ben by any chance?
No, I haven't, but go ahead with your announcement.
Okay. Yes, sir. Kelly, I've been thinking about this for quite a while, and as you know, I have a meeting with Mayor Ken Maegashima earlier next month, and I've observed the city council quite a bit. I know that very honorable city councilor Greg Smith is a very good man. He comes from a very good background. I know his mom, and I've decided that the people of Las Cruces, after all the people that I've talked to, would prefer to have somebody who doesn't have big pockets as our mayor at this time. So I'm going to go ahead and at a later date announce my candidacy for mayor of the great city of Las Cruces, if that's all right with you.
Fantastic, man. You're announcing it right now, not at a later date, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, congratulations, Bob.
Thank you. Thank you, Kelly. There's a lot of good people here. My estimate after passing out well over 20,000 American flags after 9/11 is that there's probably about 2% of the population we have to keep a close eye on. So I think we're going to be safe here in Las Cruces.
Would you consider hiring Mayor Ken as your personal assistant?
Let me go on to Santa Fe.
He's what? Oh, he's going to Santa Fe for what?
Yes, sir. Be governor.
Oh.
I'm assuming I have to talk to him first. I have to ask.
Very nice. You're sending him there to become the governor, or he's sending himself?
No. I met his family. I met his dad. We got Cunhals here, and we got Patriots, you know. And Patriots is the wrong word that I'm trying to come up with. But anyway. You always get me nervous, Kelly. That's why
Bob,
I love you
Bob,
so much.
Bob, I hope you're listening to the show. Would you stop talking for a second?
The general consensus is they want somebody who
Bob.
Is wholesome and private.
Bob vent some steam here for a minute. Then see if I can get a word in anyway.
I have a lot of tracking to do, but other than that, everything's going to be fine.
Bob, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry for talking to the phone, Kelly.
Oh, you got to talk into the phone, but consider occasionally breathing, which is one thing that I advise some of the people that call me that seem to be able to talk. I don't understand how some people can talk for 15 minutes without taking a breath. Not you, of course.
I know,
but
that they're angry.
Okay,
I,
but
I
hold on, Bob. Hold on, Bob.
But then, you know,
Bob, for God's sakes,
okay.
Bob, please,
Kelly,
Bob,
have
listen.
Ran, have you ever been at like a run, right, been
let,
a jogger
let
where you
Bob
have a blue heart?
For a few minutes here.
Okay, you know what a blue heart is, right?
It's like somebody standing on your foot and you ask them to get off your foot and they say okay and then they forget. Bob, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, but you don't know what a blue heart is?
I'm asking you to stop talking for just a second and listen.
I apologize.
Just stop talking right now for just 1 second. Did Mayor Ken tell you that he's running for governor, or did his father?
No, I talked to the receptionist in the mayor's office, and her name is Roseanne. Really nice lady, comes from a very good family. And she indicated to me that she didn't think Ken was going to go ahead and run for a fourth term. I think that he's going to be going on a sabbatical. I'm not sure.
A sabbatical? Bob, yes, a sabbatical? Sir. I mean, how do you take a sabbatical when you're not in office anymore?
Well, you don't have to be in office to take a sabbatical.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, so your impression is that Mayor Ken is running for governor, which gives you an opportunity to run for mayor, and you're going to be running against Greg Smith.
I haven't talked to Ken, yes.
But that is your impression.
Pardon me?
That is your impression.
Today.
All right, okay. It may not be tomorrow.
A lot of Fox News, okay?
Okay. Bob, I got to go. Congratulations.
Yes, sir, thank you.
All right, folks. So I have this. Oh, we have another call here. Thanks for the call, Kelly. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. This is Carl. Two things. Number one, if God had meant for you to talk more than here, you'd been born with two mouths and only one ear. And number two is my lady and I and a couple of other people went into Cafe at Go-Go yesterday for the first time.
Yes.
And I said, we're here because of Kelly O'Connell. Had a nice meal. And John said, tell Kelly I said hi.
Oh, so, God
anyway,
bless
I was going to call you and let you know. Thank you.
Carl, thank you so much. And, man, you have a voice for radio, plus you listen.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Right. Have a good day.
Thanks.
Have a great weekend.
You
Thank
too. Bye-bye.
Thank you for
All
everything
right.
you do, Kelly.
Thank you, Carl. Bye-bye. Yeah, well, I think I'm going to be playing somewhere else, but I had a couple of different offers, so, you know, I got to move around a little bit. What's the old saying about being a rolling stone, gathering no moss? No moss is not just a phrase used in boxing by hands of stone. All right, so look, let me get this thing to you here. If the internet deities will help us here. All right, so here's my concern. And I mean, as I've told you 1,000 times, I've got this problem with my friend Pete, who's a nice guy. He's a great friend. He's the kind of guy that whenever you need a friend, he's there. I mean, a smart guy. And, but I've just got this continual, you know, like battle with him, and he always I sent him an article. Did you read the article? His go-to move is, did you read the article? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, it doesn't mean what you said it means. I'm like, all right, let me go back and reread it. I reread it. It means everything that I said it does and more. And then I'm like, did you read the article? And of course I did. And at some point I'm like, you know, your debate has to be on more than reading comprehension. Like, nobody has the reading comprehension that you do. And, you know, when he was supporting Trump a month ago, and now he's his biggest critic. And he would, you know, Pete was the world's greatest Obama supporter. He acted like he was God in so many words. You know, the only up to probably the first 4 years, the only thing that he had done wrong was he tried to do too much. And I mean, I thought it was touching in a way. You know, this white liberal guilt support the black president thing is, I guess it comes from a good place, but I mean, I've found it to be sad in a way too, because it represents this kind of, I would say this kind of cult like thinking. And so that's how I started the show today. Is liberalism a political theory, or is it just true? So what the, I think the chief problem that liberals have in the world is they present every statement they make as a conclusion. And if you don't agree with, you know, there's no debate, there's no dialogue. You're presented with these conclusions, and if you don't agree with the conclusions, you're, you know, bat feces crazy. The guy said in the tweet that got him suspended, the newscaster, the sportscaster out of Chicago, that there is this, you know, this, I'll get that and have it for you the next after the next break, but very insulting. But, you know, it would be so much better to be in a society where you could disagree with people and then have a conversation as to why you disagree, you know, instead of being told, you know, somebody makes a statement and they see you're startled or you're frowning or whatever when they make the statement. Wait a minute. You don't agree? What's wrong with you? You're sick. You're mentally ill. You're uneducated. You're a redneck. You lack grace. You let, you know, the love of human kindness, all these things. I think liberalism is an intellectual dead end, and it's going to get to the place where it's going to become an embarrassment to be a liberal. I think it already is in a lot of ways. I mean, a true liberal, not the kind of liberal Democrat that listens to this show. And there are many Democrats in this town that would be Republicans in another town, but that's just the way it played out here. Anyway, 626, and here's this continuing clip on spying on the president. So to bring the circle around, Pete was telling me there was no spying and that Trump lied. All right. But, I mean, what if we find evidence of spying later? So, I mean, you know, I can't talk to Pete either anyway. I don't mean to share my personal agony over my friendships, but here we go.
It's tough for me to get into it, right, because I've only read the report, so I don't know all the intelligence that went into it. But to me, it's clear that I would be concerned if I was the president, and that's why I wanted him to know, and I felt like I had a duty and obligation to tell him because, as you know, he's been taking a lot of heat in the news media, and I think to some degree there are some things that he should look at to see whether, in fact, he thinks the collection was proper or not.
All right. What about this process? Because we got to go back. I think you would agree with me that the unmasking, if we have our intelligence community doing their job, and I want to emphasize that I have great faith in our intelligence community, and they provide this country with safety and security. It is a necessary evil in an evil world, right? But in the process of surveilling anybody from any foreign country, which they have a right to do and an obligation to do, if an American is picked up on that call, isn't it standard operating procedure, sir, that they don't unmask the identity of the American, doesn't matter who it is, and that when they write up the report, they usually would not include the name of that person or details. They would minimize what they actually say the American is saying. Isn't that standard operating procedure?
But I think there's a couple of different issues at play here. So names, for sure, if they're picked up in any incidental collection of any kind, they should be minimized. However, the other issue you're bringing up is unmasking. So if there was an unmasking of a name, additional names, we need to know who requested that unmasking, why, what was the purpose for unmasking, because it should be pretty rare that American names are unmasked. And that's what we're trying to get to the bottom of, and we're hopeful that we get some of the information tomorrow. So that the rest of our committee can review it.
And then that would also mean that in the case of General Flynn, not only did an unmasking take place, but also an intelligence leak, which, as I understand it, never happens in a case where signal intelligence such as this is, in fact, obtained. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've never heard of that happening before. And as I've said many times, the only crime that we know has been committed here is that one. And it's quite clear that it was a crime. And, you know, look, I think you said it right, Sean. These programs are vitally important to the security of our country. And that's why we take this seriously here in Congress, to conduct our oversight. And clearly, when I see a problem, I'm going to point it out.
And in the case of any type of leak, that would be a violation of the Espionage Act. That would be a felony. That would be 5 years potentially in prison.
That's correct. It appears like that happened, right? I mean, we won't know until we got all the details, but from my perspective, it appears like that was a crime.
And that raises another question, because you talked about it being widely dispensed within the intelligence community, meaning many people saw the surveillance of the president-elect and his transition team, and they were identified. Then it goes to the issue of how many people had access to it. 2 weeks before President Obama left office, he modified Executive Order 12333, which allowed the sharing of this type of intelligence, which had never happened before, with 16 other agencies. Is there a possibility that was done so that leaks could be covered up, sir?
Well, in the reports that I read, they were clearly disseminated far and wide, and I don't think it actually has anything to do with the change in that procedure. But what I saw was disseminated pretty far. And in many cases, you have to wonder why, which is why I raised the question.
But prior to that modification of Executive Order 12333, it was not usual practice to widely disseminate. So certainly, they had to look. If this happened in November and December, that didn't happen until January. The alteration of 12333. Is there anybody that you saw that had dissemination of these documents?
Well,
that,
I just want to be. I don't want to get in the weeds here, Sean. I don't believe that change impacted what I saw.
Okay.
Okay. But with that said, I will say that the dissemination was pretty far and wide. And like I've said before, I think it appears to me that it was all legal. The question is should it have been done in the first place? Did it meet foreign intelligence value? And then secondly, were any other American names unmasked? And I have information that says that there were.
Do you question whether or not it was necessary for surveillance? In other words, when you read, okay, so-and-so is talking to so-and-so, did you get the impression, why would this be surveilled in the first place?
Look, I think there is, in a lot of what I saw, there is a lot of foreign intelligence value. I mean, look, our analysts do a really good job. Our intelligence agents do a great job. And so, you know, what it was on the margins of the things. I'm just not sure it should have been included into an intelligence report. And then surely there shouldn't have been an unmasking of additional Americans' names.
Congressman, did you see any legal issues that would worry the president in any way, shape, manner, or form?
No, and I've said that too. What I saw had nothing to do with Russia. This has nothing to do with the Russia investigation. But it was important enough that I thought the President of the United States should know what is being said about him and his transition team.
The FBI director did confirm, now it is usual practice, and I've heard James Comey say it itself, that they don't comment on potential or ongoing investigations. He did confirm an investigation into Russian influencing of the election, but he wouldn't confirm whether or not there will be an investigation. And you pressed him hard on the issue of whether or not those people leaking intelligence, whether that's being investigated. It seems to me that the FBI director shouldn't be able to have it both ways.
Yeah, I mean, look, the leak investigation or lack of a leak investigation is quite concerning. We need to make sure that these leaks are being tracked down. And it's part of our investigation is to make sure that we do try to find who was at least knowledgeable of the information that eventually got leaked.
One last question. In terms of the ability, if you look at the leak of General Flynn, we know that's a felony. You agree that's a felony.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that would have to come, could this happen at a low level, or is this something that would have to happen at a very high level, meaning a director or just below a director? In other words, who would actually have access to that type of intelligence?
Well, as we if we do expect that his name was unmasked, I think the key would be able to figure out who actually unmasked the name and who requested that unmasking. There has to be a record of that. Once we can get a hold of that, we'll know a lot more from there.
Yeah. And so do you suspect then that people will go to jail over this?
Well, once you understand who did the unmasking, then you have to know who it was pushed down to. What's the complete audience of people that would have had the name? And then you kind of know at least your initial folks that would know about it.
Now, I think that also goes back to 12333, because it could have been now 16 other agencies involved that maybe something hand delivered and not sent over electronic device. Sir, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
All right, so here's Nancy Pelosi's response. Nancy Pelosi is the person who said, we're going through the gate. If we can't go through the gate, we'll jump over the fence. If we can't jump over the fence, we'll pole vault, and then we'll parachute in to create health care reform, which has absolutely destroyed health care availability in the United States. Did you ever hear her apologize? Did you ever hear her say, I made a mistake, I lied? Well, here's what she says about Devin Nunes. This is one of the main things that I disagree with these people, is the contempt that they smear on these individuals who disagree with them. It is like a cult.
On the Russia probe, real quick. Yeah. You said that Chairman Nunes is now not an honest broker. He's unfit to lead a bipartisan investigation. Does that mean the Democrats will no longer participate, or will you still?
No, I'm just talking about him. The Democrats are fully prepared to be unbiased in terms of an invest where the facts and the law lead. That is all this is about. And no, I'm just talking about him. He was part of the Trump transition. All of this relates to Trump transition by and large. I think it's very clear. He himself, I don't know if that was a cry for help or let me out of here or whatever that was, but it was highly unusual outside the accepted behavior of a chairman of an intelligence or any committee. Thank you all very much.
Well, I haven't watched this whole clip yet, but
Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi, the House this morning came in at 9 o'clock Eastern. Here's where things stand. The Republican conference was to meet this morning. That meeting was either canceled or postponed. The House came in, debated the same day rule, a same day rule allowing them to take up legislation on the same day that the rule is considered. And so still in the works is the formation of the Republican repeal and replace plan. At this hour, the House Freedom Caucus headed to the White House for a meeting with President Trump. We also can tell you that, at least for now, there's a briefing scheduled at 3:30 Eastern with House.
She called Devin Nunes a stooge, and he's highly compromised. Now, did Devin Nunes have a responsibility to go tell the president? Now, the response from the Democrats is going to be President Trump is under an investigation right now. So what is this investigation anyway? And why is there no investigation into the leakers of this information? Number one. Number two, I mean, what is going on here that the Democrats insist that the president is just another elected official? This is going in a direction that I think is dangerous and does not bode well for the country, but it doesn't really bode well for the Democrats. If your theory is that anybody who disagrees with you is a nobody and has no power, even the elected president of the United States is a stooge, has no authority, and we're going to build a power structure on top of him or outside of him, that's not going to work out well for the Democrats, because they're either going to win that or they're going to be at some level destroyed, because you can't continue to do that. My opinion, of course. 523-1450 AM Las Cruces. It's 6:37. We'll be back.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come away and let my heart.
Now, do you think it was appropriate for Devin Nunes to come out and announce to the press that there quite likely was some spying on Trump, whether determined or on purpose or accidental, that uncovered a lot of information, private information, and then the names were unmasked? I mean, one of the things he said is that the president was getting a lot of heat, and I think part of it was political, but I think the political maneuver was appropriate to the extent that there was lying that was put out by people like Comey. I don't see how Comey survives this. He's so, I don't understand where he's coming from, but he seems so politically motivated, and I don't really think I understand where the guy's coming from, but it's very strange to watch him at work, you know. But anyway, here is Bob Woodward of Watergate fame on the unmasking.
I think if true is a gross violation, and it's not what Trump said about him being tapped directly, but apparently what has happened here is a couple of diplomats who can be legitimately wiretapped were talking about meeting with Trump or people on his transition team. And of course, you can learn all kinds of things from diplomats gossiping, because that's what occurs under the rules, and they're pretty strict. You are supposed, it's called minimization. You don't name the American person being discussed. And there are 20 people in the intelligence community, for intelligence reasons, can say, okay, we need to unmask or take the minimization off of these names. But the idea that there was an intelligence value here is really thin. It's, again, down the middle. It's not what Trump said, but this could be criminal on the part of people who decided, oh, let's name these people.
I think that it verifies the implication or the import of what Trump said, which was that people unfairly spied on me and my team, and then that information was shared. Now, why was it shared? I'll just give you one guess. The Democrats convinced themselves that there was a Russian angle to Trump. And you know why? Because I think it helped explain why they screwed up so bad. It's not really their fault that Hillary didn't get elected again if somebody else was helping the opposition. So I just think that it's backfired on them, and now the Democrats have been trying to sink Trump in terms of a liar. I think this shows that he wasn't lying. Was he inartful with his vocabulary? You know, you can argue he usually is anyway, but I think that what he's doing is he's trying to defend himself. But here, all right, so here's a little Tucker on this. I'm staying on this because I think it's massively important that we understand what is happening in the government, and the idea that the government can spy on anybody it wants to is an extremely scary concept. Here's a little more from Tucker.
Well, for weeks, President Trump has been ridiculed for his claim that the Obama administration may have monitored his communications, and he still hasn't provided proof of that. But today, House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes revealed that there is evidence, some supporting the president's claim. Watch this.
What I've read seems to me to be some level of surveillance activity, perhaps legal, but I don't know that it's right, and I don't know that the American people would be comfortable with what I've read, but let us get all the reports. It is possible.
Well, President Trump reacted this way.
Do you feel vindicated by Chairman Nunes coming over here?
I somewhat do. I must tell you, I somewhat do. I very much appreciated the fact that they found what they found, but I somewhat do.
So this is a genuinely interesting development. We call more than 30 members of Congress from both parties who have mocked the president's claim he was surveilled. None of them agreed to come on. So instead, we're joined by someone brave, Jessica Tarlov. She's a Democratic strategist and senior director at Bustle.com. Jessica, good to see you.
Nice to see you, too. That's like best intro ever.
So, I mean, look, I was frustrated by the president's tweet. I said it right to him in an interview last week. I thought it was imprecise. I still think that. But I think underlying all of this is a really big issue that we're ignoring, we being the press, because the press hates Trump. And that is that the U.S. government may have, in effect, misused the power of its intelligence agencies for political purposes. We're not sure of that. But it's a little bit weird that one administration would be surveilling a candidate and or his staff during a presidential race on the other side. Doesn't that sort of give you pause?
Well, that's not what I understood happened today, actually, or what Congressman Nunes was saying. What I understood he was saying is that there may have been legal surveillance of foreign actors that then picked up, incidentally picked up activity within Trump Tower. So I think the real issue is here, why were we surveilling people that people within Trump Tower were speaking to? And the fact that the president's claim is still, as far as we know, completely inaccurate and without foundation. That's what I took away from today.
So those are two separate things. But let's go to the first one first. Now, I think there's evidence that these investigations were initiated by the Obama administration because they believed there were untoward ties between the Trump administration and foreign actors, A. B, we know from the chairman's remarks today that those names in the documents, in the readouts of the conversations that were wiretapped, in effect, were not redacted, which contravenes policy. You're not supposed to leave the names open and have them floating around government systems.
Absolutely.
And yet they did leave the names unmasked, as they say, which seems a major violation.
It does. And I've had this conversation before, and I do think it's important to address that issue that those names are protected when they are supposed to be. But at the same time, I don't know why Republicans want to focus on that and not the fact that Donald Trump made this claim without anything to back it up. And we even have a breaking news report this evening that it looks like the FBI does have evidence that there was collusion between Trump campaign members and Russian operatives in order to damage Hillary Clinton. And we'll see where that continues to go. But
well,
it's very
that,
odd.
I don't know that we have that. I think what we have is one of the Democrats on the committee suggesting that there's evidence. And
yeah.
And look, I'm open-minded about that. But here's the point. The idea that one administration might be using the massive intelligence gathering of the United States government for political purposes is a terrifying prospect. And we've seen it before. We saw it with Governor Elliot Spitzer of New York. And I'm sorry to defend Elliot Spitzer because I know everyone doesn't like him and he's a liberal and I'm not. But he was put under surveillance by the feds for the crime of adding money to his own bank account. And because he got caught up in the hooker scandal, nobody seemed to care. But it was a big deal. We saw General David Petraeus, whose life was destroyed because they broke into his Gmail account. Because why? So this stuff, this power has been misused again and again. But it's been misused against people who are not popular in the press. So nobody says anything about it. But we should care.
We absolutely should care. And I just would like this to be separate conversations. I mean, I'm happy for us to talk about all of them. But one doesn't, you know, equate to the other necessarily.
And I disagree with where this lady's coming from, and this is kind of like talking to Pete. You separate all these different things. You define wiretapping, then you say there was no wiretapping. Trump lied. It just so happens he got lucky because there was this accidental surveillance and somebody unmasked the name and they shouldn't have done that. It is a bigger thing that's going on, and it had to come from – somebody had to say unmask these names, it's okay. Somebody had to say – let's surveil these people. There is no evidence campaign was colluding with Russia that I've heard. And I mean, we're pretty deep into the topic. So we'll take a break here and come back. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. Next hour, we're going to move on into other topics. 523-1450. It is the 24th of March and it's 6:50. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. All right. So, you can take whatever side you want, but I think the... For me, anyway, the takeaway from this is something happened and Trump became aware of it and he wanted to point it out. And he happened to point it out when Jeff Sessions was in trouble. And I guess Jeff Sessions is no longer in trouble. And if that was his purpose, then he achieved his purpose. But I do think that there's something going on here where the legitimacy of Trump has been challenged. And now they're finding any way they can to destroy him. Which is, I mean, that's, I guess, even Trump said that's politics. But if we're going to only accept Democrat candidates to be in office, I mean, so that's what I'm getting at. It's starting to look like a cult. Nobody can disagree with a cult, right? Well, here's a little Jeff Allen, some dark humor to lighten the cult mood here.
Because I get asked, I'll be out there, and people come over. The most often asked question I get, is your wife aware of the way you talk about him?
No.
Trust me. She thinks I'm a bricklayer. She really does. Honey, I'm off to Ohio. I'm going to build another home. I'll be home on Sunday. It's amazing how fast they go up. God bless me with a wonderful, 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 resilient woman. And she's got a warped, dark sense of humor. Give you an idea what she thinks is funny. We have a son that doesn't get satire. Ryan does not get sarcasm, satire, whatever gene that is. First time he saw Monty Python's Holy Grail, he goes, flesh wound, his whole arm fell off. You know. Everybody else is falling on the ground. I don't care how many times I see that bridge scene, I'm laying on the ground. Just a flesh wound. Stupid. So she knew this. She knew he doesn't get everything literal. Everything literal. Took everything literal. He's 6 years old. He walks in. What's for dinner? Dog eyes. I don't want dog eyes. And she'd leave the room. So here, now, we'll cut to about 4 or 5 years ago. I'm in my chair at home. Every man here has a chair. You have a chair, don't you, sir? You're darn right you have a chair. Because you're a man. That's why you have a chair. That's your throne. If you ever went missing, they give a cushion of that chair to a bloodhound. Find that smell. Then they'd revive the dog, send him on his way, of course. Paddles clear. I'm in my chair. She comes up behind me. She starts rubbing me. She's got her arms around me, nibbling on my ear, kissing my neck. And, of course, I'm thinking, is it February 29th? How could Syria miss that? But I'm standing her back. I mean, she's really, really tender. She's like this. She's like, you know, and I'm nibbling. A couple of minutes. That's all it was. It was a beautiful moment between a man and a wife, 28 years. And after that, she hugs me. She kisses me. And she whispers in my ear, I love you, Jeffrey. I said, I love you too, baby. And she walks away. And I'm sitting there for 10 minutes, basking in the warmth of that moment with my wife. When my son walks in, he goes, hey, Dad, who drew that big smiley face on your bald spot? What I thought was fingernails was permanent markers. She's back there scratching artwork on my skull. So don't feel sorry for her. That woman is sick, twisted, and warped. You guys have been great. Happy Valentine's Day.
All right, so we've got a situation here where, I mean, I just don't think they're going to pick Trump off, and they haven't picked him off through anything so far. They didn't get him out of the race. He's in office now. I mean, do you think that if they do a filibuster on Neil Gorsuch, it's going to work out well for him? I don't. I mean, Neil Gorsuch is presented to the American people as something that we used to have, a guy that loves his wife, is devoted to his family, is kind, polite, ambitious, believes in the rule of law, believes in the natural law, like everybody in this country used to. We didn't used to have theories of law that were totally disconnected from what we normally consider to be morality and you know, our common sense and everything. And this guy is kind of a bridge to that past that I think that the people were looking for when they elected Trump. I think they're not looking for a lost America. I think they're looking for values that have been set aside that they want back. So anyway, 659 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and we'll be back on a break in the hour. And, got more great stuff for you. We'll shift gears. And my machine is stuck. So I'm just kind of trying to think through my mind what is going to be the result of this situation with the wiretap. I think the wiretap thing is going to kind of fade away, but it's going to leave the impression in people's minds that there was some dirty tricks going on. The Democrats did Obama, whoever, had done some bad things. We'll be back, though, after. Okay, so good morning. Thanks for joining me. Always enjoy spending a little bit of time with you. Today is Friday, thank goodness. And so I'm having a little bit of computer problems here, but I think the internet might be a little bit slow today. But there's a couple of articles out there. I'll just throw them out. See if anybody is interested in either of the topics. One is Europe's soulless liberalism, a dour, self-righteous, conformist version has come to define the liberal idea across much of the continent. And this is out of the Wall Street Journal. A weather report on the France 2 television channel broke broadcasting records last week. Some 5.3 million viewers turned in to watch Melanie Sagard, a 21-year-old woman with Down syndrome, take a turn as a guest meteorologist on the network. Wearing TV makeup and an irrepressible smile, she forecast clouds and rains for most of the country and lots of sunshine for Marseille. So anyway, there is a it's kind of a strange start of the story, but there is a kind of weirdness to where the left is coming from right now, and I'm really, wondering if it is a party that is not just in decline. It's, political parties rise and fall based on events. And, if Hillary Clinton had rearranged the people voting for her into different states just a little bit, then she'd be president and none of this conversation would be going on. Although I dare say that our troubles would be even worse, even if we weren't talking about them. And generally speaking, the media does not talk about the problems of Democrats. But why is that? I think that this liberalism has become this incestuous cult and it's inbred. And like a lot of the results of inbreeding, you lose the vitality of the stock, and I don't even think these people realize anymore or care that they're in this echo chamber and they're transparently propagandizing. This guy who lived in Colorado, who did the Gonzo journalism, Hunter Thompson, had this idea for POV journalism, point of view, and I think it's better than anything that you see out there right now in terms of where the mainstream media is coming from. It's point of view journalism. Now, when I see an article, a lot of times I don't recognize the writer of the article. And it's this would invariably happen if it was a very critical of the conservative movement, but I sometimes do it on the opposite side too. Glowing review of the conservatives. I'll Google the name of the author and then I'll find out, the person is working for Media Matters or something like that. And before that they were an aide to, Ted Kennedy or Nancy Pelosi or whatever. A lot of these people are so biased that it seems to me that they would be better advised to go find a different occupation, because I think it ruins this impression. When you're reading somebody, you want the sense that they're telling you the truth and they're not spinning you, and they might be offering an opinion within the context of the article, but you want to know that. And so now we are totally under a tidal wave of editorialism that's produced in the name of journalism. So I think there's something going on in liberalism that's either got to be addressed by liberals, or the Liberal Party needs to cease, the Democratic Party needs to cease and come back in some reincarnation. So, you need two parties to fight over ideas. You can't have one party system is infinite corruption, but as you see in Mexico. But the Democratic Party now is no arguments, no goodwill. Everybody who disagrees, no real arguments, no good faith arguments. It's just conclusions. The party produces conclusions, positions, in other words. And if you don't agree with their position, then you're a monster. You're a mongoloid. You're a redneck. You're uneducated. You are a criminal. You're criminally insane or whatever. And so that's not going to convert anybody who disagrees with you. But I do believe that there are people who are in the Democratic Party who are leaving. If they're not leaving, in fact, they're leaving in spirit, They don't want to be around that type of thing. And the Democratic Party is led by these eminent greases, these ancient gray beards and gray heads like Nancy Pelosi getting up at, there's nothing wrong with serving the country at 80, but I doubt people would be super enthusiastic about voting for a president who is 80 just because of the actuarial tables, but you've got leadership in the party. There is a crisis in the Democratic Party of leadership. And when they ask who's the leader of the party, there was no clear figure that arose. I mean, Obama has probably got as many votes of the Democrats that were polled than anybody else. I could look it up, but the funny thing is Nancy Pelosi's name didn't even appear in this. People who were leader, Elizabeth Warren was a name. I think 10% of her considered her to be the leader of the party. And she's just childish. Listening to her is like listening to a librarian scold somebody for bringing a book back late. Chuck Schumer probably had 10 or 15%. There were other people mentioned, but there was no consensus. There was no consensus builder. So what's the party going to do if your leadership is right around 80 or older? Sanders, I can't remember how old he is, but he's a name that came up, but he's an older guy. You don't have a backbench. We've talked about this before, but there was a failure in the Democrats because they built a national party and were in running the government at the top level. But underneath all that, it's like a team. It's like a baseball team. If your farm system doesn't, if your single A, double A, triple A farm system, the teams below you that are part of your organization don't produce talent, then you have to go out and buy talent, which is a very expensive undertaking. It's easier and it's better to develop talent. And so in the same way, if the Democrats lose races across the United States and have done so for a couple of decades now, 10 years, whatever, then where do the new leaders come from? Because like any other undertaking that's sophisticated, you have to develop talent, So somebody typically starts out in the state legislature or, city council, county commission, then at some point decides they're going to run for the state, Senate or Congress, and then they run for U.S. House and U.S. Senate. But getting elected to that, you're still a newbie. And so you're not going to, you'd still have to be groomed or learn how to become a national leader. So anyway, the Democratic Party is in trouble. I think that they've got to, it's got to be very comforting to tell yourself that all of the positions of your party are true, right? But that's not politics. That's religion. A political system, a political party has various planks that are in its platform. This kind of image, you have a platform, and the platform is made out of pieces of wood. Each plank is a position. And Democrats have offered up their planks in their platform as being politics is the art of interacting with others, according to Aristotle. Politics is the art of influencing and persuading people. If you propose to people, every person that you interact with that doesn't agree with you across the board that your positions are all true, have to be supported. If you don't support them, you're a monster. That's really not persuasive in the traditional sense. It is, it comes across as really monstrous. You meet someone who says, if you don't agree with me on all of my beliefs, I'm going to persecute you. I'm going to harass you. I'm going to try to get you fired. I'm going to try to disrupt your relationships. You'd think the person was insane, right? So I think there's a real issue in all of this stuff that the party, the party's got to address this somehow. The party, in a political party, has to at some point be attractive, because it's got to attract people, and it's got to attract younger people who will then grow up to be, individuals who will support and carry forward the mission, whatever the mission of the Democratic Party is. And it is inevitable when you listen to their ideas and their conclusions, their positions, their planks, that it's a very, very, very secular movement. And that's a whole other issue, but that's why I think it appeals as a religious replacement, is because the people have already in arriving there have already kind of given up on this idea of, God's place in the system or in the influence and in the definitions. All right, my computer's a little slow, so we'll hang off the music here and take a break. 718, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450. We'll be right back.
Another one that I want to introduce you to is a band called Mitchell's Affliction. quite a while. And they did check cash in country, and it was pretty amazing.
All right, so here is some headlines for you. Trump's regret, we should have done tax cuts first, which I'm sure is true. House is setting risky health vote up. Pass it to know what's in it. That sounds familiar. Trump demanding support and do or die vote on health care plan. Republicans scrambling. And it looks like it's another situation where it's so complicated you can't even really explain it to people. So we've got the attack in Britain, and I'm amazed at how the propaganda campaign that tries to argue that all religions are the same is always keeping people from really talking about what's on their minds. And I'm wondering if at any point the people in the West are going to decide that they want to put Muslims to a higher scrutiny than other folks. I'm just curious because, I mean, it's these attacks are, this is a guy that he had a Western name, then he changed it to a Muslim name. He was 52, middle-aged guy, dissatisfied with life. And, what is it about Islam that their go-to move is killing somebody, I mean, what is, other than just planting terror in people, that idea that nobody can disagree with you, which kind of sounds familiar, and that you have to, all of these attacks, I think, are meant to put them in the position where nobody can oppose you, because if they do oppose you, then you're going to go on this murder spree, which it might sound like kind of an excessive way to explain it, but how would you explain it? I mean, what is the purpose? The idea that God is up there and disagrees with people who disagree with him and wants them murdered, that is a stretch, isn't it? God is love. This is the religion of peace. And by the way, if you don't agree, I'm going to kill you. Chris Matthews on why you have to oppose Neil Gorsuch. I think this is a terrible move for the Democrats, but maybe it is their only move.
Tuesday, March 22nd, 2017. Donald Trump wants the United States Senate to confirm his pick, Donald Trump's pick, for the U.S. Supreme Court. He wants Democrats to join Republicans in giving his pick the 60 votes to override the expected filibuster. Let me suggest a very good reason not to let this happen. It's not about Trump's pick. It's about the President Obama's pick, the one Mitch McConnell and his bunch decided did not even deserve a vote, did not even deserve a hearing, did not even deserve the respect of someone nominated to this high position. Just like McConnell decided in 2008 he was going to destroy the Obama presidency at the get-go, decided that he wanted to wait for the next president to do business with. He decided 8 years later that he would bump Obama's court pick from the line and wait for a pick by the next president. Well, this brand of bad politics has to stop. Since the Republicans aren't going to stop it, the Democrats have to. It's not about being a sap or a chump or any other word you call a person who gets taken and lets himself or herself get taken again. It's about starting to fix the system. A president nominates a Supreme Court justice. The Senate deliberates on the nomination. We will not get back to such respect if we let Trump exploit the vacancy Mitch McConnell created. We cannot allow these two opportunists to complete what we call in basketball the alley-oop play. One guy throws the ball high up there above the basket, and the guy standing there right underneath jams it in. I don't want to see Donald Trump stuff his nominee through the hoop. Why? Because it's not his turn. It's Merrick Garland's turn, and everyone knows it. Vote nay on Gorsuch. Demand the 60 votes and don't give them to Trump. It's not this guy's turn. It's not his guy's turn. And all the charm and dancing and Mr. Nice Guy is not going to change it. It's not about Gorsuch or even Trump. It's about Mitch McConnell and the brand of low-level politics he stands for. Get it? That's Hardball for now. Thanks for being with us.
I guess we get it. Yeah. So, that's all there is to it. You got to oppose him. So does that mean they oppose the next person, or how many people do they oppose? All right, some more headlines for you. NSA to provide smoking gun evidence. Obama spied on Trump. Bob Dylan lonesome after deaths of other legends. Cops, a nursing home employee secretly Snapchatting seniors having sex. There's this really weird story that came out of Florida, of course. Half the weird stories in America come out of Florida. That there was this community where people were, I'm sure I could find it. I think it's over by Tampa. Some community where, you know, this retirement home where there was just rampant sexual activity. I'll find it after the next break. All right. Here is a very interesting clip with Gorsuch and Al Franken, who used to be on Saturday Night Live. And it just kind of shows you how nimble Gorsuch's mind is.
I understand. You've given a version of this answer before, so I understand. I'd like to return to something I raised in my opening statement, and that's your view of administrative law. I think before conservative activists gathered at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee, President Trump's chief strategist, Steve Bannon, and his White House chief of staff, Reince Priebus, outlined the president's agenda. Two topics were featured prominently, deregulation and your nomination. Now, I don't think that's a coincidence. Reince Priebus started by explaining why nominating you was so important for the president to do right out of the gate. He said, referring to your nomination, quote, number one, we're not talking about a change over a four-year period. We're talking about a change of potentially 40 years of law, number one. That's change of potentially 40 years of law. Change the law. You and your colleagues here have said the job of a judge is to follow the law, even if he dislikes the results. You said that. Not change the law or change 40 years of the law. But that's what Reince Priebus said this is about. When the White House chief of staff is talking to his friends at CPAC, he says a justice job, that your job is to change 40 years of law. Yet my colleagues and you say it's to follow the laws as written. Well, it can't be both. So which is it?
Senator, it's to be a judge, to be fair, to follow the law, to apply it to the facts and circumstances of each case. And live out my judicial oath on whichever court I serve on, whether it's the 10th Circuit, where I've served for the last 10 years.
Okay.
And where my opinions have been unanimous 97% of the time, Senator. I've been.
I understand. And again, you've given many times that answer. So you'll. Mr. Priebus went on to say your nomination was central to President Trump fulfilling his policy objectives. Quote, Neil Gorsuch represents the type of judge that has the vision of Donald Trump, and it, referring to your nomination, fulfills the promise that he made to all of you, speaking to the conservative activists gathered at CPAC. What do you think that Mr. Priebus was talking about? Was he suggesting that if confirmed, you would be positioned to shape the court's decisions for the next 40 years, or was he suggesting you could reach back 40 years, Roe v. Wade turned 44 this year, and president has promised to nominate judges who would overturn Roe. Chevron is 33 years old. I think this is a legitimate question. Was Mr. Priebus suggesting that you go back and change 40 years or of settled law or have an effect on the law moving forward?
Respectfully, Senator, Mr. Priebus doesn't speak for me, and I don't speak for him. I don't appreciate it when people characterize me, as I'm sure you don't appreciate it when people characterize you. I like to speak for myself. I am a judge. I am my own man.
Okay, I just want to we've had some talk about this. I don't think we're crazy to think that the administration and Reince Priebus, I don't think he was lying. And it doesn't. Are you comfortable with your nomination being described in such transactional terms?
Senator, there's a lot about this process I'm uncomfortable with, but I'm not God. No one asked me to fix it. I'm here as a witness, trying to faithfully answer your questions as best I can, constraints I have as a sitting judge. Here to answer questions about my qualifications and my record.
I got it. Well, I find it unsettling that the administration is talking about, the chief of staff's talking about the Supreme Court that way. But I want to get back to the panel at CPAC after Mr. Priebus discussed your nomination.
All right. I think that's the takeaway moment. I mean, that is a power move that he did on Al Franken. I mean, I think Al Franken is a funny guy. He was on Saturday Night Live. He should use his comedy or his humor a little bit, but because he just sounds like a dud. And he sounds very cynical, and he sounds like somebody who's in quicksand who realizes he's up to his neck and there's really not much he can do about it. So we'll take a break here. 7:32, got some local news for you. AM Las Cruces 523-1450. Be right back.
This is the air, beautiful prayer. This is the air, my only friend, the air.
All right, a series of articles on this. The Village's retirement community exposed after a couple allegedly had sex in public from BuzzFeed News, and that's from the New York Post, BuzzFeed News. All right, so that one's just an ad, but here is Sex Lies in the Villages, another article on it. All right, so here's from the Daily Mail. 10 women to every man, a black market in Viagra, and a thriving swinger scene. Welcome to the Villages, Florida, where the elderly residents down. Sex on the Square cocktails in honor of women. Of woman, 68, arrested for public sex with toy boy. So, Villages in Florida is the world's largest retirement community and has a reputation for naughty behavior. Peggy Clem, 68, was arrested for having drunken public sex in the square with toy boy 19 years her junior. 4 days before her arrest, she'd been put on probation for drunk driving her golf cart. Local bar has made a $3.75 Sex on the Square cocktail in honor of Peggy, who's married to a wheelchair-bound husband. And the Mail Online UK went undercover in the villages and found a thriving swinger scene and a black market in Viagra, dubbed Disney World for old people. There are 10 women to every man, and their antics would make Mickey Mouse blush. Resident Belinda Beard, 62, said, all of the women work hard to look good. Turn your back for a minute and someone will try to steal your husband. Swimming in cheap booze and sunshine every night is Saturday night. One of its most famous residents was a retired biology teacher who called his, well, let me skip that one. So anyway, pretty interesting. And so these guys got convicted. I think the lady was sentenced to jail. I think they both were for a brief period of time. Although I did live in Florida, I've never seen this place. All right. So another article on this, romance and STDs inside Florida's wild retirees getaway. And 20,000 acre Central Florida complex. And so the villages spans three counties with 40,000 homes and more than 70,000 residents. It boasts 34 golf courses, 9 country clubs, 2 downtown squares, and a slew of restaurants and bars. And getting lucky is one of the residents' primary pastimes. The huge complex began growing rapidly in the mid-1990s, and reported cases of gonorrhea rocketed from 152 to 245, of syphilis rising from 17 to 33, and chlamydia from 52 to 115 among those 55 and older in Florida from 95 to 2005. And the state's sexually transmitted disease rate among those over 65 is one of the fastest growing in the country. In 2006, a local gynecologist reported that she treated more cases of herpes and human papillomavirus at the villages than she did when she worked in Miami. And, all right, so if that's, option for you, if that's your fantasy. 7:39, Kelly O'Connell, I got some local weather for you. 523-1450, we will be back.
Of everything that's down to the
end. It's Kelly.
Yes, sir, Kelly. This is Bob, your friend Bob. The reason I'm calling briefly is that I may have been a little premature on that announcement on your wonderful, great station. And I really don't know. I don't know if Ken's been divorced twice or three times, okay? So those were errors on my part, all right?
Okay, Bob, thank you. Have a good weekend.
You too, sir.
All right, so did you want to talk a little bit about the healthcare reform? Did you want to talk about the Democratic Party's empty rage? I mean, let me ask you this. Where did the theory that Trump conspired with Russia come from? Where did the fury, the absolute fury, and just the total commitment for total war against Donald Trump, where what's the origin of that? Isn't it just self-hate for screwing up? I mean, it seems to me that we've got a situation here where people are very, very angry, which I understand your person loses, and so you go into a tizzy. Oh, and by the way, Bob called up and said he does apologize to Mayor Ken. He spoke hastily, and he didn't do his research. He doesn't know if Mayor Ken has been divorced twice or three times. Ken, feel free to call in and straighten this out. Anyway, Bob, no biggie. But I do understand, but I don't. I think we've already lived through this period of time where you either agree with the left or you suffer the consequences, which is fascism, isn't it? I mean, you either agree with me or else. Isn't that kind of a lack of freedom of belief and speech and everything? And we called it political correctness, but isn't it time to move on? Are human beings evolving or devolving, or are we on a flat plane? Because if we're evolving, I mean this spiritually, of course, intellectually, it seems like we've evolved quite a bit. We no longer accept racism, slavery, sexism. You know, there's lawyers out there trying to get, I should get a clip on this for you. Lawyers trying to get human rights for chimps. Now, I've met some folks that reminded me of chimps that had human rights, but to actually give a chimp human rights, that's a new horizon. But you know, so are we going to evolve out of? I mean, it's not really polite to come up and say you either agree with me or you're finished, right? I mean, it strikes me as kind of like over the top, but I'll find a clip on this, but there's already clips in there from a couple of years ago. And well, all right, here's a short little clip. Watch It News, kind of a cute name for this news channel, WOCHIT, Watch It, you know. Kind of a pun, I guess. Or, all right, so is a chimp human? All right, so if there is evolution, right? I mean, and a critic of my position on evolution said, I can't believe that you said, Kelly, that evolution was a theory in search of facts, which I do believe that. But if you do believe in evolution, is there a point where the soul or the spirit evolved? And is that the point where human rights are called in, or are human rights to be applied for all animals? And if all animals have human rights, aren't we to follow the policy, the beliefs of the Jains, J-A-I-N-S, who believe in ahimsa? Ahimsa is the doctrine of radical nonviolence. You cannot kill and eat anything. As a matter of fact, if you step on an ant, even by accident, you've brutalized the earth. You know what I'm saying? So is that the direction things are going on? Well, here's a little Watch It on chimpanzees, rights, personhood, etc.
For more than 25 years, animal rights lawyer Steve Wise has been arguing that animals who have cognitive complexities similar to humans should legally have the basic rights of autonomy. Wise, who founded the Non-Human Rights Project on behalf of great apes, cetaceans, and elephants, is going before the Supreme Court of the state of New York in Manhattan to argue that two of his clients, chimpanzees Kiko and Tommy, should be given the rights of personhood. Wise says, personhood is not synonymous with humans. A person is the law's way of saying that entity has the capacity for rights.
Anybody want to lay some money on where this guy stands on abortion? Just saying. All right, let's take a little break here, and we'll be back and talk something on health care. I'm looking for science stories, too, that are they're trying to figure out where gold in the universe happened. 747-47, man, I just caught that. Flying those ultra-friendly skies in a chimp, human rights chimp-free zone. Kelly O'Connell Show will be right back. 523-1450.
Safety or surprise, the end. I'll never look into your eyes again.
Wow, a lot of interesting stories in science. there is a claim, although I don't know if I can get this thing to play, but there's a claim that dinosaurs came from Great Britain. That's strange, isn't it? I mean, don't dinosaurs come out of some other place like Africa? But it is in the news, and looking for a clip on it, but maybe I might have to do this on another day because the computer's slow. A 3 billion solar mass black hole rockets out of a galaxy at 8 million kilometers per hour. Yes, seriously. And the galaxy is called 3C186. It's a fuzzy blob, even in the most powerful telescopes, but don't be fooled. It's 8 billion light years away, a distance vast enough to sink even the mightiest galaxy to a smear of light. It's got a supermassive black hole in its center, and this is a quasar, a galaxy with an abnormally bright core. These are caused by the black hole residing there, believe it or not. And it's blasting out of this thing. Friction and other forces heating this material to millions of degrees, and it's so hot it blasts out light across the electromagnetic spectrum. And this is a little bit hard to take in, isn't it? But anyway, it's traveling at an enormous speed. I don't know if going into any more detail would explain it any better, but all right, this is from CS Monitor, ChristianScienceMonitor.com. The earliest dinosaurs may have roared with a British accent, according to a new study. And I'm not seeing any clips on this. Let me do a little more serious search here. And well, I don't see any clips on it, but anyway, the upshot is that according to a new study, the fallout from a newly proposed dinosaur family tree that upends and bulldozes the one that stood for the past 130 years. And if lead author Matthew Barron and colleagues are right, dinosaurs may have emerged millions of years earlier than previously thought. And and it may have come out of Britain. I find this interesting. So other news. Well, do you want a little clip from Rand Paul? Or how about this new guy here, Representative Thomas Massey? Ryan, a healthcare bill even worse than Obamacare. Check it out.
I have so much more difficult, as we all know, and putting enormous barriers in the way of helping patients who we are going to help. We're going to get this thing done. We're going to get it figured out. It's a tough situation our country has been put in. It's not easy.
I'm really optimistic that we can get there. I mean, there's still a lot of details to work out. The president and I came to an agreement in principle. I think what we're trying to do now is to make sure that our agreement is actually something that can be executed in a way that passes the Senate. And so there's still work to be done, right. But I can tell you that the president is all engaged.
A little bit of optimism there from the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. Joining us now from Capitol Hill, Republican Congressman Thomas Massey of Kentucky. Congressman, appreciate you being with us. I want to show the tweet that you put out last night. It's been retweeted thousands of times now. You said you've moved from no to hell no on your vote. What's with the move?
Well, you know, there was a lot of speculation that Republicans might be changing their votes, a lot of arms being twisted, and I wanted to let people know that my vote had not been changed favorably for this bill. I'm still very much opposed to the bill. I think it's worse than Obamacare.
And so what is at the core of your problem with the bill? We've heard there are different corners of the Republican Party that have different issues with the bill. What's your chief criticism of it?
Well, we're replacing mandate subsidies and penalties with mandate subsidies and penalties. And frankly, it's not very well thought out. And right now here in the last 4 hours, it's like a rocket that's lost its fins. It's getting less stable. in terms of planning. I don't know where this thing's going to land. Hopefully it lands in the ocean and this thing just sinks. But my chief objection is I don't think it will lower the price of insurance or health care for Americans. And so I can't be for that.
Steve Kornacki.
Yeah, Congressman Steve Kornacki. What is it, practically speaking, what are the consequences for the Republican Party and for this Republican White House if this bill goes up for a vote and goes down to defeat? You've got tax reform. Supposedly, that's the next big agenda item. Can you pass tax reform if you can't get something like this through?
Oh, absolutely. This isn't a prerequisite to tax reform at all. The consequences of passing this in the House and the Senate and signing it are much worse for the Republican Party than the consequences of this bill going down today. I hope that it goes down today. And by the way, we've got 2 years. We've got lots of bites at this apple, and we should go back to the table and bring all the parties at the table to the table at the beginning instead of at the end.
Joe?
Congressman, it's what I don't understand. I mean, if you're a conservative Republican and you got a chance to reform Obamacare, why would you vote for a bill? I'm not talking about you, but why would any Republican vote for a bill that, as you said, doesn't lower insurance rates, doesn't really, at the end of the day, lower deductibles? It doesn't really lower the cost curve of health care going into the future, and it doesn't bring free market forces into the health care system in a significant enough way to actually, as we know, lower costs the only way they can be lowered by free market forces. Why would any conservative vote for this bill?
Well, Joe, you've been on the Hill, and you know how this place works. The insurance companies were the ones at the seat at the table when this bill was written. That's why everybody comes out worse, except for the insurance companies, if this bill passes. And so they bring a lot of pressure to bear with the money that they contribute here on the Hill. And I think, you know, I'm no conspiracy.
Yeah, terrible to hear that, isn't it? What do you expect, though? They're going to have to do more than one version of this thing, obviously. All right. In the first oil find since reforming the oil market in Mexico, which was absolutely terrible when it was just it was very corrupt. They have found a significant amount of oil down by the Yucatan Peninsula in a place called Bay of Campeche, southeast Mexico. So, and they've also found, I meant to tell you about this, significant amount of oil, a new find up in Alaska, over 1 billion barrels. They're calling it the biggest find in 30 years, but they did find one that was 3 billion barrels in a place called Alpine in Texas, not too far from here. So I think one is regular find and the other one is related to fracking, the one in Alpine. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, so great to spend some time with you. Hope you have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you soon. Ciao.
Can you picture what will be so desperately in need of some stranger's hand in a desperate